So welcome, everybody, to the podcast of the European Society of Anesthesiology and Intensive Care. This Industry Corner episode is kindly sponsored by Neon Coden. I'm your host today. My name is Michel Streis. I'm a professor and chair at the Department of Anesthesiology at the University of Groningen and the University Medical Center Groningen in the north of the Netherlands. And I'm also the chair of the scientific committee of ISAIC. Today, we will discuss the topic early interventions with advanced predictive technology for high-risk patients, and we will explore some innovative solutions. And therefore, we have invited Mr. Andreas Schabach, who is the Senior Vice President Commercial Operations at Neon Coden Europe. Mr. Schabach, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you very much, Professor Streis, and thank you much for having here. And also thanks to ISAIC for the opportunity to talk about, as I think, a very interesting topic, which is going to determine a couple of our future discussions, both on the user side as well as on the industry side. So thank you very much and happy to be here.
Absolutely. We look forward to an interesting conversation between the two of us. So if we think about the today's healthcare landscape, managing and preventing major adverse events pose significant challenges. We have changing populations. Our patients are getting older, sicker, having more comorbidities. So as healthcare professionals, it's becoming quite a complex situation. And of course, we have a lack of healthcare professionals everywhere in the world, not only in Europe. Technology might help us, and innovative approaches, and I'm convinced too, as a healthcare professional myself, are needed to better address these issues. And in this podcast, as already said in the introduction, we aim to explore advanced predictive technology as a possible solution to all these problems, patients and the lack of healthcare professionals. You're an expert in this field. You're working for industry. So for our audience who is not an expert in the field, can you first tell us a little bit what you think about advanced predictive technology? And first of all, what is predictive advanced technology?
Yeah, that's a very, very good and very key question, because when we're talking about advanced prediction, we immediately enter the field of artificial intelligence, which is one of the en vogue topic at the moment. It's a term or terms that everybody uses, but I don't think that we all have a very common understanding what is artificial intelligence exactly and what are applicable use cases for medical scenarios. That is, I think, a big thing we need to clarify. And even on the authority side of things, that clarification doesn't seem to be very, very clear. When we look, for example, into the AI Act of the European Union, even there, the definition of artificial intelligence is relatively blurry. Because
for the people who doesn't know it, the European AI Act is legislation that is set by the European Commission to regulate the use of AI into the healthcare sector to avoid that people are doing things that are perhaps coming to the limits of what is ethically possible. Just for the audience who doesn't know it.
Yeah. Thanks for that. And that is the key question. What is ethically feasible? Not everything what's technically possible should be implemented in that range. And we know that the MDR has originally not necessarily been made for software solutions or even for KI-based solutions. It was more made for the medical devices as such, where the definition as of when a device is safe or unsafe is relatively easy compared to when we enter the world of artificial intelligence. Yeah. And when we look at this AI Act, the definition keeps on being a bit blurry. The definition talks about a system which, to a different grade, is meant to be working autonomously, and which is able to adjust after the initial start of the system, of using the system. So that sounds a little bit like machine learning.
Yeah, correct. That's the big buzzword, of course.
Yeah. And the question for me is, do we need to go that far at the first step, or can we make first steps in creating meaningful applications that help us analyzing the gazillion of data that we obtain with all the devices around an ICU patient.
Correct. So for the audience, perhaps to clarify, if we're talking about AI, that's the big buzzword. But of course, there are various levels of what we could call artificial intelligence. And it goes way back like 50, 60 years with the first predictive modeling approaches, algorithmic based and agnostic. And over the last decade, AI was machine learning. First of all, the simple advanced learning systems were introduced, coming to more neural network solutions. And now we are talking about deep learning in the more black box and the high-end approach. So, and I agree with you, do we need for everything that highest level or of artificial intelligence being deep learning, which is, to the best of my understanding, really a black box and very hard to explain what is happening.
Yeah.
So if I understand you well, you're also more a fan of starting perhaps at the right level with predictive technology.
Yeah, I think this journey, and we cannot make this journey as industry all alone, trying to think about what may be good for the end user. We need to do this with the medical professionals together. We need to do this together with experts for ethical belongings and ethical questions. We need to do it together with experts for regulatory questions. And this field at this moment is not very clearly defined. So I think it would be wise to start in smaller steps. So what does artificial intelligence mean? I think in principle, we can be talking about a system that helps us seeing the forest for the trees. So there is a lot of data, and we want to see the ones that are relevant. So if we look at this like this, we can take it a bit easier, and we can start without a machine learning system, for example, just implementing systems that would look at data, compare data to historical data that from patients that were running towards a clinically adjudicated adverse event, and see if we see and check if there are similarities in the progress of that patient. And these systems would not necessarily need to give a therapeutic or a diagnostic recommendation. This is this, this is that. These systems could, for example, just say, hey, we compare the data of your patient that you're currently treating with a database of hundreds of thousands of patients, and we see something that indicates something is going wrong. Go and check. Please have a look. Yeah. So this could be a first, I think, very meaningful and helpful step to flag up a risk score, because from my experience, and I have critical care background as well in my earlier life as a practical educator on ICUs, when we work in with these classical scoring systems, the big drawback of these scoring systems is that when the score is hit, when the patient hits a steady score, the complication or the deterioration is almost there, more or less.
Yeah, it's happening at this moment.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
It's happening at this
like
moment.
Like new score, for example, or some severity scores in the ICU. Yeah, that's the now moment.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. And the question is, if there would be a huge library of patients with different clinically adjudicated adverse events, can we train models to look at specific things? So patients that had a sepsis, how was the correlations of the determining parameters 2 or 3 days before? And do we see similarities with the patient that we're currently treating? Can we then say, hey, we're not saying this is a sepsis, but this patient shows something that was similar in 80% of the databases we found and finally led to a sepsis. So we're not saying it is one, but we're saying there is an increased risk. So please go and check.
Probability that something is going to happen. Okay. So you're talking about prediction modeling on a probabilistic scale here. That the chance, it's like the weather forecast of what we know from the US from the tornadoes. And the farther you go into the future, the more unexpected it becomes, the variance becomes bigger and bigger. So in your opinion, I'm personally, as an anesthesiologist and a clinician myself, I'm a little bit skeptical on predictive models as the field of anesthesiology, certainly anesthesiology, perioperative medicine, is changes are going to happen very fast. You don't know what the surgeon will do in the next 2 minutes. So if he has a heart artery, then of course the situation is totally different because the patient starts bleeding. Are we? I'm a little bit skeptical about the rapid change predictions in the OR. And for me, it might be a more practical solution for the ICU, for example, or for the emergency department. You talked about sepsis. I think sepsis is a very good example that is a physical change over hours or sometimes days. So where do you see, for starters, in our field of anesthesiology, emergency care, perioperative medicine, where do you see the first applications?
Definitely it's on the ICU, but we can also think on making this applicable for the med-surg wards or for the intermediate care wards. The challenge will be that if we're talking about an ICU patient, and I agree that anesthesiology is probably not the best use case because when algorithms look at data and compare data, they need to have a certain amount of data over a certain of time. Otherwise, the prediction is guesswork. And normally, I would say that except for certain surgeries, the patient would not stay that long in an OR to have a long enough data window to make a reliable prediction. And then even the algorithm would need to compare with patients in that very same situation and not with patients that were on the ICU. So we would compare apples to peas, and that would make the algorithm surely not more precise. But if we think about the intensive care units, then we're talking about patients with second-to-second data that can be fed into an algorithm. So the prediction can be very, very precise because we have a second-to-second data. We see immediate data progression, not necessarily for the lab tests, but even there, the lab test, for example, white blood cell count, is made more often than it would be on a normal med-surg ward. But in principle, an algorithm could also be working on a med-surg ward with spot check monitor vitals data and one or two times a day lab test, with a caveat that we know if the density of the data we put in is not that high, then the accuracy of the data that the system puts out can also not be that high. But in principle, it is doable. In principle, we can do that. We can apply on those kind of system on med-surg wards, on intermediate care wards, and they obviously work best on an ICU.
Yeah, so I fully agree with you that the combination of vital signs monitoring, also feedback from the nurses as discrete entry points, but also lab results, physical exams, imaging results, can be included in this predictive modeling. Are we, from an industry point of view, are we that far already? Do we have enough data? Do we have the right technology? Do we have the right people? Is industry ready for this?
I think so, yes. At least for the what the training, the models that are trained. For example, if we would look at a data pool of 250, 300,000 patients, and then the data would be filtered for those out of with clinical adjudicated adverse events. That's what I forgot to say. So, and the data pool would look at those out of these 250, 300,000 patients that had sepsis. And then the model would be trained to look at the data development 2 or 3 days prior to that event. Yeah. And when we look at patients that had respiratory failure in that group, the model would obviously need to be trained on looking at something different, on a different data correlation. And this training of a model can be done, and it is done, and there are systems available that do this. These systems are not self-developing. So these systems do not automatically apply that machine learning thing that comes with new patient data. So this library would need to be updated and the model would need to be retrained. But I think that is a pretty feasible first step into this. If
So
the future will allow.
we are talking about agnostic systems here and not about gen AI, so not about generative AI, which is learning from the previous patients. I think we have to be clear here, and I fully agree with you that the gen AI might push you in a very small, perhaps unwanted direction, focusing on something and forgetting all the rest. I fully agree with you that we are not that far. But for the agnostic systems, I fully believe that this is indeed the right way to go. So these systems are what you described are more or less predicting a signature of illness.
That's exactly what
a specific illness. And when I'm focusing on, for example, when I have a system that focuses on, as you said, sepsis, and the patient starts bleeding, will the system help me, or do I still have to come in as a doctor to make the difference? Where is which part important?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I do believe that at this moment, from the maturity level of those kind of systems, we would need to agree on a certain type of deterioration you would preferably want to look at. And then define the model that was trained to look at those kind of data. But even in that, we would still require the physician to have a look at the patient, because everything we would do is telling, flagging it up, there is an increased risk. We would, even when the model to be applied would specifically look for the sepsis cases, we would not necessarily say this patient is going to develop a sepsis. That is not, because we don't want to bias, we don't want to diagnose. We would say the data correlation shows that there may be something going wrong. So, and define, depending on the model that you define, not we, not the industry, the physician defines, you know in what direction the warning goes. So in that case, the warning would go into sepsis. When you look for respiratory failure, the warning would go in direction of respiratory failure. Would that system in that case miss a patient bleeding? I don't think that we have enough experience to judge that
for it.
Yeah. I would believe that some of the parameters would also change. But we know that there are different models that had been trained to look for hemorrhage, and different models that had been trained to look for sepsis and respiratory failure. So there seems to be a difference. Would that be something that the system observers...
It's parallel, of course.
Yes, I think so. I think so that this system can be run parallel. So you can decide on what ward, what you are looking for. So what do you apply it for, which ward? Where's your major risk on which ward? And this can be expanded, I think, for the future. For example, when we think about DRG driven systems, we could check the risk of ICU readmission. Yeah. When you think about this, that, for example, a cardiac surgery ICU, which is depending on throughput,
high turnover.
So you high turnover. You want to get rid of that patient once he seems to be stable from an ICU clinical staff perspective. But then he goes to, depending on the hospital infrastructure, intermediate care, or more or less something with less nursing coverage, less skilled nursing. And if a complication there is overlooked and not early warned in whatever way, the patient may reappear in the ICU and then block this bed for a long, long time. So this could also be models that can be trained in those kind of systems for the risk of ICU readmission. And so this is, I think, a very interesting first step where we as a company would like to focus on before we start entering this adventure of generating self-learning things which we don't know how to control.
Yeah. And this will help the nurses, of course, too, that they can use these early warning systems as a prediction of illness to take the right steps earlier. And certainly if they have to take care of more patients, I'm also convinced that these assisting systems might help us in detecting subtle changes in some of the parameters of the patients that... We don't have the time to focus on all the data from all patients at one time due to the lack of personnel. I fully agree with you.
Yeah.
So
you mentioned a very you mentioned it very.
Sorry, go on.
No, you mentioned a very nice the statement, looking for the signature of illness. That is exactly what we want to do.
Yeah.
But then at this moment you just need to define what signature are you looking for.
Correct.
And so this is at the moment maybe a little bit of a restriction, but we're at the beginning of this journey. The our position is that we want to start this journey at a meaningful level. Then plan, do, study, adjust, and move along, as I said, together with regulatory, ethical, and clinical experts. And maybe in 3, 4, 5 years, we have such a model that learns and gives more information than just the risk prediction or flagging an increased risk without biasing the physician towards a treatment. So maybe
taking, of course, as a last point in this podcast, the ethical considerations that these systems are not willing to replace the physician or the healthcare professional, but assisting to improve care. All right. Thank you very much. We already covered 20 minutes. Time goes very fast.
Time flies.
So I would,
with interesting topics, time flies.
Yeah, absolutely. I would really like to thank you, Mr. Schaubach, for being here. And I thank you, everyone online, our listeners, to listen to this episode. And to tell you that the Ezaic releases monthly podcasts on the Ezaic website and various streaming platforms. And we hope that you will join us soon for the next one. Thank you very much.
This episode is sponsored by Nihon Koden.